We were discussing Gore.
Gore, Albert Gore, the Detroit Lions. Gore, the biggest loss to the people of Tennessee was Albert Gore losing to Bill Bryan.
What, in your opinion, caused that defeat?
At a time of this Judge Carswell situation, and, at a time when Tennessee was going through maybe a transition period, some people accepting more liberal views. I believe maybe Gore was, some people said Gore had the Potomac fever, you know, you stay up there so long. I think that Gore had such a distinguished record of service as a United States Senator for Tennessee and for our country that he maybe was a few years ahead of grassroots element thinking of Tennessee. I've analyzed that many times. I believe that must be, it had to be that he's out front a little more than the people down here in Tennessee. You know, you got to remember that Albert Gore received in the election he was defeated in the largest vote that any Democratic nominee ever received in the history of the state of Tennessee. The single largest.
Let me get your reaction to a possible theory. I'm familiar with the, you know, the tradition of the three states of Tennessee and both the historical differences in those sections and the political historical differences in the sections. And yet, I'm also struck by the fact that statewide, pretty much across Tennessee, that insofar as religion is concerned, there'd be some variance with denominational strength, perhaps from one area to another a little bit, but it's pretty much a Protestant state tending somewhat toward conservatism, but that's pretty uniform across the state.
And, I agree.
And my question is, how much impact did Brock's, the way he utilized the prayer in school issue, have in that campaign?
My judgment was a total disgrace, the way he utilized it, and it's the amount of money he spent on it the last week or 10 days on radio particularly was a disgrace to the average thinking Tennessee. It apparently had some effect in a time Senator Gore was being criticized about the Carswell vote, as you recall, and maybe for being too liberal, being concerned about the blacks of Tennessee and the labor of Tennessee, and also the presidential situation fitting in at that time to the attitudes of Tennessee. And of course, the busing matter was a big issue in Nashville at that time, you know, cross-town busing.
In your opinion, did the prayer thing have more impact than busing, the way it was used in that campaign?
I don't believe that. I definitely believe the prayer thing had more impact. I don't recall Gore being involved too deeply in the busing situation. He was involved in it, but no question about the prayer thing. And I think that was a, I think that's the, looking back now, and I don't care to discuss Watergate or Nixon because I just made a statement to the press a few minutes ago about my feeling about that. But looking back now, that I think Brock used Nixon-type electoral processes in his campaign against Gore. I think that's the first, maybe, in the defeat of Senator Gore was the first that we had really seen of what maybe was coming out of Washington and the South.
One of the impressions,
I think Brock will be defeated.
One of the impressions we've gotten is that Brock is more of a unifying force in the Democratic Party in Tennessee than any other single factor. I mean, it's a negative unifying force.
No question about that. Brock will be, in my judgment, Brock will be defeated.
that almost regardless of who the Democratic nominee is, that it's going to have strong support. And if it's a strong nominee, is Fulton likely to be the nominee?
I would say that. Well, of course, I can tell you now that I talked to Fulton 3 days ago. Had Howard Baker been the vice president nominee, Fulton would have announced for Baker's seat that same hour, and would have had I would have supported him. I'm not sure that Fulton would be a candidate for the nomination 2 years from now. I don't know. We're going to have a candidate against Brock that can defeat him.
Would Fulton, in your opinion, be able to defeat him if he ran?
He'd be a very... Dick Fulton would be a good candidate in anything he runs. Of course, there's speculation that I may run against.
Are you interested in running?
There's media speculation in Tennessee that I'll probably run against Brock. Let me say this. We're going to have a good candidate against Brock.
If you don't run against Brock, would you likely run for the governor in 4 years?
I probably will. I believe that I'll be reelected speaker for the next 2 years. The options are many then. Our Secretary of State's office will be coming up. Brock's race, the Senate race, will be coming up. And in 2 years from that, the next governor race will be coming up. I'll make a decision in the next 2 years to either run for statewide office or decide to just stay in the legislature. My business might keep me from, if my business situation were to work out where I could completely leave them, go into public service on a full-time basis, I would be interested in making a statewide race. If they don't materialize in that manner, it might keep me from doing it.
If you had a choice now, would you rather be in governor or senator?
I don't. That'd be a hard choice. I think that we've got, personally, the only reason I'm in political office today is because I guess as many politicians say, I honestly want to offer some public service and be of some public service because I can live comfortably without it. And I guess probably where more public service is needed today is in Washington than in Nashville. So I'd say I probably would prefer to be in the Senate over the governor's office. However, I feel more knowledgeable about state government than I do federal government.
How do you assess Winfield Dunn as governor?
I assess Winfield Dunn as a man that came along at a time that John J. Hooker was in trouble from a business standpoint, had enjoyed the affluency that comes from being a successful businessman. At the time he was running for governor, was enjoying the heartache that comes along with being a business going down and going into bankruptcy and broke. Dunn came along, and Winfield Dunn is very inspiring. He portrays has much charisma, and he portrays himself as a man that people want to cling to and like, popular. And I would say that Winfield Dunn has no knowledge of state government. He has a great, since he got elected governor, he has a great ability to identify problems, but has no ability to prove or to implement solutions to problems. Memphis, they gave the land for it, and we still don't have a prison built there, which we should be using and occupying now. He hasn't been able to implement the program. his administration, we've doubled the mental health budget because of the need, and they haven't been able to implement and build the mental health centers that we've got money appropriated for.
How much of the problem has been his staff, and how much of it has been him?
I think he's got some good commissioners and he's got some bad ones, but it's all a reflection on the governor's office when you go from $1.1 billion budget in 4 years to $2.2 billion budget, and you don't implement program.
If you were governor and faced a Republican-controlled legislature by the same narrow margin as the Democrats now in control, how would you deal with that situation
I'd follow the pattern that's just been set by the new Republican President Gerald Ford. I'd go to them in my own way, my old self, so to speak, just like I was when I was among them, and sit down and talk to them about the problems that the state's got or the nation's got in his example, and ask them to help me.
Did Dunn fail to do that?
Well, I don't recall Governor Dunn coming up. I've had a very cordial relationship with the governor. I've just disagreed with him on many times, and he's won a few, and I've won.
Now, his record of getting overridden on vetoes set some sort of maybe national record.
Yes, it is.
Is that likely to weaken the office of governor in the future?
It could. I regret that we had to make all those overrides. I don't personally like to override a veto, but it was important this time that we did. I think I don't think it's any real reflection on Governor Dunn. It was the lack of experience on his part in public service. You know. After all, he came out of a dentist chair to the governor's chair, and I just believe today that people that are elected to office should have some experience, just like you do in business, to be successful. You know, you got to have some experience in business if you're going to be a successful administrator, and you need to in government service. You see, I think what's happened that the Democrats now are realizing that they've got to get back together, because we've got Bill Brock in the Senate, I can't think of one thing Bill Brock has done for the people of Tennessee that he represents. Not one real total Tennessean type thing. And we've got Howard Baker. I believe that Howard Baker enjoys a more grassroots support in Tennessee than Brock or Dunn all across the state. We're going to be following the pattern that Kentucky did a few years ago, our neighboring state. You know, Governor Ford told me the other night we were together that we're in the same shape Kentucky was in. They had a Governor Dunn, and he won. And they had two United States senators, and now they've got Dee Huddleston. And now Governor Ford's running for the Senate against Marlo Cook. And I think that Kentucky has done what Tennessee will do. I think that we are, again, the party of the grassroots of Tennessee. If we offer the right candidates, we'll be in office. Wendell Ford made the other night, and I was with him. And it's a speech I think he's trying to make without saying anything about Watergate, but he makes it on the Constitution, and it's a hell of a thing. It starts out, "We the people." And then he starts talking about we the people in order to form a more perfect union. And, you know, when you say people and when you say union, I don't say anything about Negro or white or man or woman or Indian. I believe that maybe these people back then, and the more I read, the more I study, the more I wish I had a better education. But I believe the people back then really had more in their field than we had somewhere in the period from after the Civil War or during the Civil War up until some years ago. When now, what I'm saying, I recognize the need of the black and the and some of the underprivileged people a lot more since I got public service than I did when I was in that position. In other words, being an underprivileged person and having to work at the shoe factory on the machine. And my daddy worked for the Roosevelt's Recovery Act program. What did PWA, WPA, whatever it was.
WPA.
And, you know, he walked 5 miles from out there in the country down here to get his shovel and lean on the handle, as they used to say in history. But, you know, I was raised in that, and I don't believe I recognized the problem of being in it, but I believe since I have come up through the other way, maybe, and got to where I do make a respectable living, have some money in the bank, and then going from there into public service, that I see more of a need than I did when I was among them, when I was in that elevation.
How much of a role have the black legislators played in terms of educating white legislators in Tennessee toward needs of black people?
Oh, I think they've played an important role. I think that I sit down and talk to our black legislators in the, when they have a meeting in a caucus, come into my office in the Capitol. And we sit down and really talk about the needs. And we talk about housing, and we talk about the food stamp programs and all those things. And let me say this, the blacks don't ask. They didn't, for example, in food stamps, they didn't ask for more food stamps or more dollars. Their concern is to make the food stamps available to the people that, that need them and get to those people that need them. And sometimes folks get to the food stamp line and don't really need them so badly, but there's folks out in that community that really need them and are not getting to them. Now that's a concern that I think a lot of the black people have, and I think that's a real, there's justification there to be concerned about that. Also housing. I don't think in the affluent society that we enjoy in Tennessee and the progress and the growth, honestly, I don't believe that we should have people living in one room with 12 kids. I believe we beat that in our state, and we're going to make a real effort as long as I'm in public service and in a leadership position to try to do something about it. And we passed a housing bill in the legislature that we hoped that the governor could implement, and he hasn't been able to implement it, but we're going to in the next 2 to 4 years.
What, tell me about the kindergarten program in Tennessee. I mean, is this Dunn's program or is it not Dunn's program?
Well, of course, we appropriated the money for the program. Dunn asked for, first of all, when Governor Dunn came in to office, he asked for a 1% sales tax increase. And we wouldn't give it to him because we felt that he didn't have the knowledge of state government to make such a request. And we held it to a 0.5 cent because we did need additional tax revenue. He wanted to implement a kindergarten program the first year, which would cost about $17 million. And I would have supported it, but the schools, the county systems told me they weren't in a position to implement it over a period of 1 year. They needed to phase it in over a period of 2 or 3 or 4 years. So we did not pass his kindergarten program for the 1 year. And instead, we passed a phase in of 4 years. Now, by the time he goes out of office, his kindergarten program will be totally implemented. But that's an example of, I think, the governor just didn't have the experience in state government to know about the tax request and also know and realize that you couldn't implement a program overnight.
Labor's influence growing in Tennessee politics.
Organized labor's influence in Tennessee politics is very important. Organized labor and political involvement in Tennessee, they don't try to exert themselves. I think organized labor is an important factor in Tennessee, and I really think they just have proven that they just want better government, and they want a better standard of living for their people.
Do they contribute financially?
Yes, they contribute financially, but they contribute, I would say, as individuals more than they do financially.
Volunteers
to work, yes. Like the communications workers for the last 2 years have manned all of our telethon programs in Tennessee. And I think organized labor want two things. I think they want to be in the process, and they want to improve the standard of living for their membership and for all of Tennessee.
Well, then if you try to analyze, you know, what really constitutes the basis of the Tennessee Party in Tennessee, I mean the Democratic Party in Tennessee, what sort of coalitions? You've got basically blacks, organized labor. It tends to be Democratic. Certainly at the leadership level, and is it growing at the rank and file or not? Is emotions calmed down over the issues of 4 and 5 years ago?
I don't see organized labor now as being emotional. I think organized labor represents the steady stream of Middle Tennessee and its people. I think there's certainly a place for them. But organized labor don't come in to us with great demands. They just want to make what contribution they can to increasing the standard of living for themselves and for all Tennesseans. They work shoulder to shoulder with us, and I'm proud to be recognized among them, really.
What other groups fit into the?
We don't have any violent strike situations in Tennessee. You know, you haven't read of any in the past few years.
How about the top levels of the business community? Do they tend to be Republican in Tennessee?
Top level of business community do tend to be Republican now in all over the state. Frank Clement, again, enjoyed the support of top business people in Tennessee and the top banking industry presidents and those things. I think that we're in a position now of realigning ourselves with those folks. I enjoy the personal friendship of the top business community in Tennessee myself, and it's a very enjoyable relationship, just like I enjoy the friendship of the labor movement. And the,
if you ran for statewide office, would you be able to get support from those groups?
The very definitely. I have been offered support from those groups, and not just financially in the way of help.
Is there major interest in state, basically, in growth and modernization of the state?
Some of our top industrialists in Tennessee, and I'm going to say that I can mention 3 or 4, Jack Massey of Nashville, which has been one of our top industrial people, and Bronson Ingram, which has been recognized as a national Republican. They are my friends, and you know, Billy Mitchell from the First National Corporation in Memphis, and you got Andrew Benedict from the First American Corporation in Nashville, banks. Some of those folks, I think, are independents, and you got fellows like Bill Earthman, that's my friend, chairman of the Tennessee Valley Corp, the holding company of Commerce Union Bank Systems. Earthman has been a long time standing Republican. He's a friend of mine, but he's a Republican, as I'm a Democrat, and I respect him as such. But some of these other people are independent people that the right candidate in the Democratic Party can regain their confidence and alliances.
End interview with Ned McWhirter. No more transcription this tape.